What is the principal distinction between those who do something and those who do nothing? Well, the principal distinction is whether they do anything. And, you know, I talk about, you know, we talk about the necessity to bring down civilization, and people will say, gosh, that has to be violent. But the truth is, it doesn't have to be. We could stop this party overnight if we had the numbers. I just don't believe we have the numbers, which is one of the reasons I always say that the big distinction is not between those who believe in militant resistance and those who don't. The big distinction is between those who do something and those who do nothing. And most people, frankly, come up with all sorts of excuses to sit on their butt. And that, with the fate of the world at stake, that's inexcusable. And it's one thing for which I have absolutely no patience. There are all sorts of reasons that people can't do certain things. And there are all sorts of reasons that people can get scared. I mean, I am not an organizer, and I can't even organize my pens. And also, I'm an introvert. I know people who will go and leaflet outside Walmart, and that's wonderful work. That's great work, but that terrifies me. And I once was supposed to participate in cold calling for an environmental organization, part of a phone bank, and I couldn't do it. I didn't call anybody the whole night. I was too terrified. And likewise, one time we were supposed to do a door hanging where you walk down, walk up people's sidewalks, and you put information on their doorknob, and then you go to the next house. And I spent the entire afternoon standing in the middle of the street as other people would go. I walked with them, but I wouldn't walk up to the door because I was terrified. What if somebody answers? That terrifies me. So it's okay to not do certain things, but one should still do, you can still find things to do. And I've said this elsewhere, that one of the smartest decisions I ever made in my life was when I was in my mid-20s and I realized I wasn't paying enough for gasoline. I wasn't doing anything because the problems are so big, I can't do anything. So since they're so big, I just won't do anything, which is stupid, frankly. And I realized I wasn't paying enough for gas. And so for every dollar I spent on gasoline, I would give a dollar to a local environmental organization to help cover the ecological social costs of gas. But I didn't have any money. So what I started doing is paying myself $5 an hour to do activism. And so I started off by writing letters to the editor. And then after that, I started going to anti-fur demos, anti-circus demos. And from there, I did anti-military demos. And then I went from there to doing timber sale appeals. And, you know, if I spent $10 on gas that week, I had to do 2 hours of activism. And anybody can find 2 hours. Just don't watch TV for 2 hours. Don't play computer games for 2 hours. There are 2 hours that anybody can find, unless you're working two jobs or a single parent, in which case you're raising your kids. That's what you got to do. But anybody else can find 2 hours in a week. And and one of the great things about everything being so messed up is no matter where you look, there's great work to be done. And I have a friend who runs a battered women's program used to run the battered women's program for the state of New York. She does great work defending women. Her whole life is aimed at stopping men's violence against women. And, you know, that's great that she's doing that. And she doesn't need to work on salmon. She's got her issue. So find what your issue is. Find, I have friends who love prairie dogs and work to defend prairie dogs. I have friends who love buffalo and work to defend buffalo. I have friends who love the word, and so they have tried desperately to run local bookstores and keep independent bookstores alive. And I have friends who have done work for Doctors Without Borders. I have friends who have worked on the issue of HIV/AIDS. It's like, find something that is meaningful, that at the end of your life you can look back and say, I did a good job. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I will say that we need to use any means necessary to stop this culture from killing the planet. And some people take that to be code language for violence. And it's not code language for violence at all. a great example of that is that there's a pond just outside over there. And even 15 years ago, the Pacific tree frogs were so loud that you couldn't have a human conversation outside at night in the spring. But they've gotten to be softer and softer, and because there are fewer and fewer of them. So I started looking in the pond to see what was going on. I saw that a lot of the egg sacs were white and fuzzy. And so I did some research and called some herpetologists and said, what's going on? And they said, this is saprolegnia. Saprolegnia is a mold. And it's not saprolegnia's fault. Saprolegnia is supposed to be here. Saprolegnia is supposed to be everywhere. And its job in the pond is to clean up the weak egg sacs. The problem is that the weakening of the ozone layer has allowed more UVB through, and there are some types of creatures who are susceptible, their egg sacs are susceptible to UVB, and so that will weaken the egg sacs, and then the saprolegnia kills them. And so what I've started doing, it's probably 10, 12 years ago, is I get in the pond once a week through the winter and spring, and I collect egg sacs, and I bring them in, and I raise them on the kitchen table until they hatch out. And once they hatch out, I put them back in the pond. And that's because UVB won't go through glass. Anybody could do this. This doesn't take special talent. In fact, one of my biggest hatreds in life, and one of the things I hate most, is cold water. And I remember when I was five at the YMCA, one of my earliest memories being 5 years old at the YMCA, where they were going to teach us how to swim, and I'm standing in the locker room crying because the water is so cold. I've hated cold water my whole life. But nonetheless, you know, I got in the pond. And I've said in other another of these deep green videos that I was, I'm not as smart as I seem. And this is a great example of that, that it took me about 4 or 5 years of doing this. Just torturing myself by getting into this icy cold water. And, it took me 4 or 5 years of doing this until I realized I could just buy chest waders. And I've done that, and it's now no problem at all. It's actually quite fun. But the point is that that's something you can do. And so find what you love, find what your gifts are. So find what you love. It's under assault. Defend it. And then another question is, find what your gifts are. What are the largest, most pressing problems that you can help to solve using the gifts that are unique to you and all the universe? Find those gifts and use them. I mean, there are environmental organizations that desperately need accountants. There is a person in Deep Green Resistance who is a computer whiz. There are several, actually. And one of them, it's so funny. I mean, I send him frantic emails about once a week saying, Norris, what do I do? My computer's falling apart. I need some help. And I'm presuming I'm not the only person who does this. And that's an incredibly important skill to have. And so whatever your skills are, you know, find ways to use those skills. Once again, you know, another example, you know, I'm a good writer, and I write my stuff, but I can't, for example, write press releases. I wrote one time 20 years ago, I wrote a press release for an organization. I spent 8 hours working on the thing. They took one look at it and said, we can't use this. And then they spent 15 minutes writing the press release they could use. So, you know, whatever your gifts are, you will be able to, they will be in demand. And the other thing is, figure out what it is you really, I hear about people getting burned out all the time, and I don't get burned out on writing. And part of the reason is because I get off on doing it. That'd be like getting burned out on eating delicious food or getting burned out on having sex or something. I love what I'm doing. And that's a way to not get burned out, is to do the things that you actually love to do. I would probably get burned out on this if I were standing outside Walmart doing leafleting because it terrifies me. But this particular thing I like, and a great example of this is there was a guy I was working with on protecting wetlands, and One of the things he did is he dug in the soil, and then he would compare the color of the soil to a chart. And then if it was a certain color, that was probably a wetland soil and would have a higher level of protection. I looked at him. I said, do you get off on doing this? And he said, oh, yeah, this is my second favorite thing to do in the world after playing with my dogs. And I said, this is great because I'm glad you're doing it, but I would hate doing this. And on the other hand, I have condemned myself to a life of homework. So find what you love, what you want to defend, find what your gifts are, and then find what you get off on doing, what you just enjoy doing day to day. I know people who get off on working on computer stuff. That's not me. And find all those and then start doing it and commit to it. I love this line by Florence Nightingale that she said, I attribute my success to the fact that I never gave nor took an excuse. So commit to, start with an hour a week, 2 hours a week. You can do that. And then even if you don't know what to do, don't let your ignorance stand in your way. Don't let your, nobody knows what they're doing at first. And the only way you're going to get better is by doing it and by making every mistake it's possible to make and embarrassing yourself any number of times. And that's okay. That's part of being a rookie. And then you eventually become a veteran. And then you can help other people through their rookie mistakes too. This is how all change takes place. So get off your butt and do something.